Hi, everybody. I'm Beatie Cohn-Fredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatie Show. And, you know, I say this every single week that it is the most amazing thing that when I hear my music, when I hear this intro, regardless of what's going on an hour before or a day before, I invariably have a smile on my face. And I think it's really important for each of us to figure out every single day, what is it that we need that can actually help to put a smile on our faces, regardless of what's going on or what's not going on in our lives, whether or not it's music or dancing or a mantra or medication, because it is a really amazing thing how this music, it truly, if somebody had told me this, I think I would have, you know, really kind of questioned what they were saying, but this music totally transfixes me. So thank you producers at the Progressive Radio Network for finding the perfect intro for the Ask Beatie Show. Well, for those of you who are wondering and tuning in maybe for the first time and wonder, what is the Ask Beatie Show? What is it all about? And who is Beatie Cohn-Fredos? I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. I'm also the author of the groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is a book for people, only people, however, who are serious about really finding the ways to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And I know when you think about assessment or evaluation, when we're talking about our romantic lives or our love lives, it doesn't sound very sexy and it doesn't sound very romantic. However, it is critical. And I did research with 450 people a number of years ago in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area. And the people were people all ages and stages of life, and Black and white and rich and poor and educated or not, or gay or bi or straight. And I devised a 10-step formula, which, of course, culminated in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And, you know, I wrote the book for my daughter, Jordana, because I really wanted her to have a guide, because as we all know, the reality is that we're not doing very well when it comes to our relationships. And, you know, I say this all the time, because I present all over the country and also occasionally in my home country of Canada. You know, the fact is that there have never been more self-help books and relationship coaches and therapists and relationship shows and videos. And yet every single week, I cite the very, very depressing, talk about depression, very depressing statistics. I mean, if we're looking at domestic violence, and I keep hoping, I mean, that look at the focus on domestic violence in this country. And yet, what are we seeing? We're seeing that 4 women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And if we're looking at marriage, and yes, people are still wanting to get married. In fact, you know, I read the vow section in the New York Times every single Sunday. And what I'm finding, not only are people getting married, but more than, I think, 80% of people are now meeting online. You know, who would have thought years ago that we wouldn't be meeting at synagogues or churches or athletic clubs or even, you know, on the street? And now we're seeing an entirely different situation, entirely different dynamic and generation of people who are primarily, you know, meeting online. And with the online dating, we don't have the the family and the community and the friends to be able to say, well, I knew his parents or her parents, and, you know, they come from a really good family background. So that there is actually, I mean, there's a lot of research, again, research, not sexy, not romantic to talk about researching your potential partner. But again, we have to be real. We have to be honest with ourselves. Again, the divorce statistics, 48% of first marriages end in divorce. And you would hope and think and maybe pray that your second marriage, you would do better. And yet, you know, what do we see? We have 67% of second marriages that end in divorce. And for people marrying for the third time, okay, we made our first mistakes. We made our second mistakes. But, you know, what's happening in third marriages here? Well, we have 74% of third marriages, you know, end in divorce. And in my practices here in beautiful, it was gorgeous today in New York City, and I also have a private practice in East Hampton, I talk a lot about lessons to be learned. What have we learned from our family backgrounds? What have we learned from our current relationships and our past relationships? But very, very clearly, and this is not meant to be a criticism, but it is a reality. You have to wonder what are people learning from errors in judgment that we continue to make in our relationships. Well, a little bit more about me. I'm a national speaker, and I'm really hoping to be able to do more Never Make a Mistake in Love Again presentations around the country. You know, my husband, Jim, who is a sociologist, and he is the host of the great, great television show, The Radical Imagination on MNN. It's on many, many times during the day and during the week. You know, he was asking me this morning, he's saying, what is your passion? Has your passion changed? I mean, of course, he's my passion, but, you know, in my professional life, has your passion changed over the years? And I have to say that my psychotherapy and sex therapy practice is definitely a passion, but I am still absolutely 1,000% committed to helping people to never make a mistake in love again. So what I'm planning, now that things are really easing up with the virus, I'm really hoping to be able to give multiple presentations around the country, live, of course, and on Zoom, to teach people how to never make a mistake in love again, because I have the good news. It's evidence-based good news. And, you know, just as a reminder, and I think that I cannot remind all of us sufficiently, the three things that we need to actually do, not just think about, not just read about, not just journal about, to never make a mistake in love again. So that if you are someone like so many people, probably all people, who are looking for love, these are the three things, and you have to take this in, because there is no way around being able to find and maintain a healthy and loving relationship unless you are committed to actually taking action, these three things. And the three things, again, and they are worth repeating, and I repeat them every single week. And number one is that each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. If we are not okay, we are going to be entering relationships in a way where we're either depressed or needy, and where our eyes are really not wide open. So we have to be committed to working through as best as we can the issues usually stemming from our own family of origin and past relationships that continue to get in the way of our life and our relationships. And people talk about this all the time, but there is clearly there is some work to be done. So whether or not it is the depression or the anxiety or other psychiatric problems, or whether or not you have a substance abuse problem of various different kinds, whether or not we're talking prescription medication or over-the-counter medication, and you know, or whether or not it's food. You know the things that are interfering with the quality of your life, with your being able to wake up every day and be happy and joyful. And like any task, we have to be willing to accept the challenge, even though we can't change our history, of dealing as best as we can with the problems that we have. And I'm going to share something very personal with you. I am somebody who has, I think, for years and years and years, suffered from seasonal affective disorder. And my life, thank goodness, is a really great life. I have a wonderful marriage. I have a great professional life. I have some lovely, lovely friends. I'm in good health. And yet, what happens? Every single fall, and it has actually started, my mood really shifts. And I've known this for years and years and years. And it, for, you know, for those of you who have, in the abbreviated form of seasonal affective disorder is SAD. And for those of you who have experienced SAD or who are currently experiencing SAD, you understand exactly what I'm saying. And I said to my husband, Jim, it's like a switch goes off. So having identified this for many, 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 many years, I had to do my own research and figure out what did I need to do. So next to our bed is a lamp. It's a very high powered lamp that you can purchase on on the internet, that is specifically it emulates sunlight. And I sit under, and I started doing this just last week because I felt that the switch was off. And it was like, oh no, here we go again. So I sit under this lamp, and there are very specific directions. You don't look into it, and it's not a regular lamp that you have in your house. You have to buy it, and it's very, very inexpensive. I did some of the research just looking at various different kinds of lamps, and it needs to be 10,000 lux, but you can go and you can read about this yourself. So as of last week, before I get out of bed, and that's what's really important, so that if you're going to work, it's really important that you do this, that you do what is actually in your best interest. So I am with this lamp the first thing in the morning for 30 minutes. And that, of course, coupled with the exercise and making sure that I am continuing to eat well and to take all of the different vitamins. And of course, we listen to Gary Nell talking about, vitamins every single day and nutrients. And I am absolutely a follower and absolutely an advocate of this. And the other thing that I have found in my own situation to be really important is to really, really rev up and amp up the exercise. And I'm a competitive tennis player. And this morning I was on the courts, and when I woke up, it was like, oh, this mood. And then I sat under the lights, which was something that was helpful. And but then I found that after hitting tennis with my pro for an hour, not nonstop, I was number 10 in Canada as a junior. And what's interesting, even at this stage of life, I think I'm really playing the best tennis of my life. So I know what I need to do. So I'm telling you this because each of us has to
really, you know, to figure out what are the things, what are all the things that we need to do to help us get through some of the, you know, some of the really, really tough times. So whether or not it's depression or anxiety or seasonal affective disorder or substance abuse of various different kinds, we need to figure it out. And the good news, of course, and this is news that I've been trying to communicate to you since 2013 when I first started to host the Ask Beanie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network, is that we don't need to do this by ourselves. It's just too difficult to navigate life's ups and downs on our own. So that the very best thing, I mean, if you can go to friends and family, and if that can be helpful, I mean, I think that's wonderful. But if friends and family are not there, or they're not the right people, the very best thing that you can do is actually reach out and ask for help. And for people who are in therapy, not necessarily going to mean that you are going to be in therapy for 1,000 years. Just getting a second opinion, as we do in basically everything in our lives, can really make all the difference in the world. So I've segued a little bit, you know, about the three things that we need to do if we're never going to make a mistake in love again. So again, we've got to get our acts together. Okay, we can push it aside, we can drink, we can take pills, we can, you know, we can do all kinds of things as a way of trying to self-medicate and basically not deal with the underlying problems that continue to play havoc with our lives. So hopefully I am convincing you, I am committed to convincing you to do this very important thing, which is to just deal, acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can the issues that get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And of course, number two, we need to be clear, if we're talking about relationships, about the ingredients that actually go into a healthy relationship. And I'm still convinced, despite all the books and the movies and the therapists and the love coaches and the retreats, and people are still not clear. They may intellectualize the clarity. They can talk about communication and problem solving and intimacy, but on a very, very deep level, we have to get it. We have to understand exactly what that means. And number three, you know, the Consumer Reporter relationships, you know, my book, you really need to memorize. And many, many patients that I treat, they actually, you know, they keep my book in their purses. So it's a reference just to help you stay on track. So enough about relationships, enough about my book. So what is this show about? I mean, as you know, and for people who've been listening for all of these years, you know, it is about empowerment. I want you to do well. And as I was saying to a patient of mine yesterday who had a crisis, so we got together on a Sunday, I can't want it more than you do. And yet in certain situations, I think I do want it more than the people. And of course, that becomes a problem. So that, again, we need to be committed and take action if we want to have a good quality of life, whether or not we're talking about relationships, whether or not we're talking about health, whether or not we're talking about business and our professional lives as well. Because, you know, I cite the statistics every single week about
17 million adults in the United States who are suffering from clinical, you know, depression, 40 million Americans suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And these statistics are about a year old, and I think that they probably are much, much, much higher, certainly higher, you know, since the beginning, and hopefully we're winding down with the pandemic. But we're still looking at very, very troubling statistics, you know, when we're looking at suicide. And in the United States, as an example, every day, 130 Americans die by suicide. And suicide is the second leading cause of death in the world for those aged 15 to 24. Our young people are having a very, very difficult time. I mean, when I think about having grown up in Winnipeg, Canada, there was a guidance department in my junior high school and in high school in Winnipeg. But we would go and talk to the guidance counselor, you know, if at all, if for anything, you know, about our classes, about our courses, you know, or about our aspirations educationally. I mean, we had huge numbers of children on the street that I grew up on in Winnipeg. I mean, nobody ever knows, of course, what goes on behind closed doors, but, you know, suicide and dating abuse. I mean, these were things. I mean, either I was really naive, and I don't think I was, or these were things that just, they certainly, if they were going on, they were certainly not going on in the ways that they are going on today. You know, talking about lesbian, gay, and bisexual kids apparently are three times more likely than straight kids to attempt suicide at some point in their lives. 41% of trans adults said that they had attempted suicide in one study. And here's a very, very troubling statistic. And I'd love to hear from you. You know, I'd love to hear about your own experiences. For example, lesbian, gay, and bisexual, and I would probably just add trans young people who come from families that reject or do not accept them are over 8 times more likely to attempt suicide than those whose families accept them. So again, if you are one of these people who is, you know, having issues, and you find that there is really no one that you know, no one that you trust, no one that you feel, you know, who would really understand, in a couple of minutes, I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do to go about finding a therapist. But before we talk about, you know, finding a therapist that's going to be right for you, and of course that's the key. I mean, you can go on the internet, and you can, you know, I was going to say in the old days you could just go to the yellow pages, you know, of a phone book, but we have to be very, very, very consumer savvy, just like who we let into our relationship life and our romantic life. We also have to be extraordinarily careful who we choose to treat us therapeutically. But again, my weekly tips, reminders that are really important reminders, because we get so caught up in our life and paying the bills and dealing with our kids. And it's just, there's a lot going on right now. And instead of just spending our time looking at our phones, and I've been noticing that myself, I have been looking at my phone too often, and I'm going to be a lot more self-disciplined about it. I mean, really, if a patient wants to contact me, they can certainly call me. And it's just very easy to get so distracted by a lot of nonsense, the games and the videos, and you kind of wonder, you know, really, what is the takeaway? Is there a positive takeaway from spending so much time on your phones and on your computers? So again, just my weekly tips, and you know if you're doing this, and I'm just hoping to be able to motivate and inspire you to do these things every single day or almost every single day. And of course, Gary Nell talks about this every single day, about eating healthily and interacting with people, which is so important. The isolation and loneliness can actually kill us. In fact, I'll tell you, you know, again, a little bit of a detour here. A patient of mine who's in her early 60s. She is single. She's never been married. No, we were talking about the depression, and she suffered from true clinical depression for really most of her life, came from a very, very abusive home. And she's lived in New York for her entire life. And, you know, she was talking about the loneliness and the disconnect, especially, you know, over the last year and a half when everybody was basically at home and on Zoom, and the, you know, easy breezy connection that we would maybe have even saying hello to somebody in a grocery store. Of course, all of that really, really changed. So I said to her, I said, look, I think it's time for you to try to find a community, kind of like a kibbutz in Israel, where you live, you know, in a similar place, you work together, there's socialization, you have your own house, you have your own apartment, but where there is a connection, where there are people, where it is really, really difficult to feel lonely. So she started, she's a great researcher. So she started to do some research. Now, for those of you who live in big cities or small cities, and you're thinking, I am lonely, there's got to be a better way to live. And I want community and I want connection. And for a variety of reasons, it is simply not happening. So what she found was that there is a community in Orlando, and it's called The Villages. And we started together to do some research. And apparently there are about 150,000 people who live in The Villages. People have their own homes. The price of homes, I mean, you can buy a house for a couple of $100,000. You can also buy a house at The Villages, apparently, for close to $1 million. There are 1,000 clubs, and she's leaving in a couple of days to explore the possibility, the actual possibility of moving to a community, which I have absolutely encouraged her to do. So you figure 1,000 clubs, they don't allow cars, so you have golf carts. So you're able to navigate your travels in this community on a golf cart. There are churches, there are synagogues, and she was telling me yesterday that every single night there's entertainment. There's lots and lots of entertainment. And I think what a terrific possibility of how we can start to deal with the chronic and pervasive depression and loneliness and disconnect that I hear so many people express. Again, and I'm not a PR person for The Villages, but she's going to be going for a week, and I am just dying to hear, you know, what her experience is going to be. I think as you get older, and even if you're younger, And this is not a community where there are children. So apparently the average age of people is over 50. And, you know, we're very, very curious, and she is single, you know, what the demographics are and how many single men there are and how many single women there are. But, you know, we have to, you know, when we go around in circles and when we're finding that our lives and the way that we are navigating and living our lives, that it is not working. This is where we need to rise to the top and sit down and be serious and be savvy and figure out what are some of the other options. So I'm going to keep you posted about this community. And if you know of other similar kinds of communities, I'd really like for you to, you can, you know, contact me through the Progressive Radio Network or through my website, you know, bdcohn.com. So again, you know, there are, you know, many, many things to do. And again, I mentioned again, the exercise, the weight training, the, if you're into yoga and meditation and acupuncture and even taking a shower, bath, you know, uninterrupted, you know, close the door. And if you have family around, just tell them to stay out, that you need some time. We all need time to just kind of focus and just give to ourselves and do things that are really in our best interest. And of course, again, having supportive people in our lives, it's not a good thing to be living your life in isolation. And this is where, you know, you don't need a lot of people, you don't need hundreds of people, but it sure is nice if you have, you know, you want to go out for a cup of coffee or you want to go for dinner, to be able to just pick up the phone or, of course, text or email someone and say, I'd like to get together, or I'm feeling out of sorts, I'm feeling a little bit lonely. And in terms of the kinds of people that we have in our life, you know, on the flip side, we need to be very, very conscious of eliminating toxins. And of course, Gary Nell talks about toxins and chemicals in our food, you know, and in the environment. But when I talk about toxins, I usually talk about toxic people. And that sometimes means friends and family. And my thesis, and I debate this with some of my patients on a regular basis, is that a little bit of poison still is poison. But their retort to me is, what if I can't function alone? And the only person or the only people that I know express a little bit of poison, what to do? Well, if you're in a situation like that, I guess I would then suggest, if you need to be with someone who exhibits and treats you in ways that are a little bit poisonous, then you need to be very, very mindful that when that little bit of poison starts to seep through, that you give yourself permission to exit. And it's really about training yourself, because if you stay with the little bit of poison, you can be sure that little bit is going to escalate into much more. And I understand that we all can't be fortunate enough to have healthy relationships with our family and with our children. But if you're finding, you know, and I see this all the time, that the little bit of poison is really putting you in a very, very bad state. It's kind of like, and I was saying this to another patient a couple of days ago, a woman who's in her late 60s, who I treat in East Hampton. And she says, but look, You know, sometimes my kids treat me well, and sometimes my ex treats me well, but I never know from one day to another, you know, whether or not, you know, the shoe is going to fall. Very, very difficult, you know, way to live. And yet, as a mother, she's not in a position and never would say, you know, to her children that she was not going to see them because they treat her pretty badly at times. And yet the flip side is that at times they treat her very well. For me, these are crazy making kinds of relationships that I find almost intolerable to be able on a personal level. To be able to tolerate. So again, the importance of really finding people, good people, sensitive people, empathic people, people who you can count on. And, you know, as I used to, once a year, I would ask patients, and I'd also ask my friends, you know, to take a look at the people in our lives, our business relationships, our friends, our family, and to take a look at and to really evaluate the quality of these relationships, and then ask yourself the question, you know, who stays and who goes. And it's a tough exercise, especially if you're dealing, you know, with your own depression and your own disconnect and your own feelings of alienation and loneliness. But toxicity in our relationships, it'll kill us one way or another, whether or not we're talking about depression or anxiety. I mean, it is crazy making, as you all know, to be in relationships with people where you never quite know from one day to another how this so-called relationship is going to go. You know, other things, again, and I stress this all the time, the dancing and the music, and some people really like herbal teas, some people like aromatherapy and essential oils. But, you know, something I don't think that I have really focused on enough with you is the greatness of helping others and giving back. And when I look at my own professional career, I think that in helping thousands and thousands of people over the past 35 years, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you, you know, what it has given me. And reaching out and helping someone, or getting involved in a cause or a social movement where you're doing something important, where you're taking yourself, your ego, you know, out of the mix, and where you are striving to do something for the greater good. And I see this. I see this a lot with my husband, Jim, who's a sociologist and an activist, you know, who has been involved in the social movement world for many, many, many years. And I see that in the giving and the putting yourself on the line for causes, for what is right, for things that have happened, if we're talking about, you know, racism or income inequality, or things that need to be corrected, what we in return get from being a part of social movements or groups that are taking concerted action to do things that actually really, really matter. So I think that that's something that we should all maybe think about. And if you're lonely, I can't think of something better than, you know, getting a dog or joining support groups. And again, being very, very mindful of what you were eating. You know, another patient of mine is addicted to sugar, and she will have, you know, I can't even begin to tell you, you know, how much sugar in any given day. Is she pre-diabetic? Well, absolutely so. And yet, you know, she tells me that this is her way of trying to self-soothe and self-medicate. And yet, there have to be, and there are many, many, many things that we can do, positive things that we can do, constructive things that we can do to self-soothe, to help us feel better. And something else that I've noticed in the last number of years, and I'm seeing this with so many of my younger patients, you know, 25-year-old women, you know, MBA students or people who've completed their MBA from Harvard and Wharton, some of the top schools, there's no balance. They work. They literally work all the time. And how are they living their lives and how are they feeling? Well, as you can imagine, not too well, not too well. So again, even though the perfect balance does not exist, it's so important to try to find, you know, every day some ways to find a balance between work and love and, you know, and fun. And, you know, finally, and, you know, Gary Null has talked about this, you know, for forever. He talks about, and I want you to really take this in because it's important. What he says is really, really important. He talks about intentional ignorance, right? We know something, but we are intentionally ignorant, and intentional neglect, how we choose to neglect ourselves, so that we need to be really mindful. And this is the same homework that I talk about with patients every single hour of the day. And this is really the same homework. And these are reminders, and really important reminders, that I love to give you every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show. And the homework is to take a very, very honest look, a hard look, an introspective look at your life, your friends, your family, your eating, your nutrients, your exercise or lack of, your work, and ask yourself, am I living my life in ways that are really in my best interest? That are really in my best interest, where I'm not a caregiver and getting nothing back in return? And this is something else. I was, you know, discussing this with another patient in East Hampton over the weekend. And, you know, she was saying to me that she now realizes, we've been in therapy together now for a few months, that basically everything that she has been doing with her husband has been enabling him. Now, listen to this very carefully. She has been enabling him to remain a child. And it was something like, I think there were lights that really went off in her head a couple of days ago. In the giving and the giving and the doing and the doing, she was not getting anything back. She was becoming more and more depressed. She was thinking about getting on higher doses of antidepressant medication, when in fact, in this particular woman's life, it is her situation that she is depressed about. It is her situation that she inadvertently, unconsciously, you know, has really been enabling to go on. Little things, she would let her husband off the hook, and then was absolutely furious that he was not, you know, that he wasn't doing anything. So this, you know, we have revelations, so to speak, you know, in all kinds of ways. So think about it. Please think about it. All of us, are we living our lives in ways that are in our best interest? And if you are, it's great. Continue to do exactly what it is you're doing. But if your answer is no, okay, then we need to figure out, or you need to figure out, in what areas am I not being good to Johnny or Susie or Amal or Muhammad? And maybe you need to write it out. and look at your relationship. Look at your relationships with colleagues at work. Look at your family relationships. And then, of course, you know, push comes to shove for all of us, hopefully, where we're going to have to figure out what we are going to do. Because, you know, one of my favorite sayings, and I've been saying it forever, is that it's not what we say, it's what we do that really determines how well or how badly, you know, we are going to function in our lives, in our society. Well, the time is moving along, and what I was actually planning to do, you know that I'm the new advice columnist for Dan's newspapers. Very exciting. Love it, love it. I'm writing two SBD columns every single week, and I'm hoping to really be able to engage the people in the Hamptons in dialoguing about mental health and thinking more about mental health and relationships and sexuality. So I received a letter, and I'm always encouraging you, okay, you can write me Ask BD Letters. You just have to go to either the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can go to the bdcode.com website, and I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. I want to know what you think about the show. I want you, and it doesn't always have to be, you know, positive. I want to know suggestions that you would like to make, you know, topics that you would like me to cover, because basically what I'm doing, you know, I'm taking subject material that I deal with in my practice, and of course, subject material that we are reading about and hearing about in the news media, and trying to do some real psychological commentary and analysis that will be helpful to you. This is not about me. This is about you and making sure, just really, really making sure that I am giving you what you need. And if you are finding, whether it's with me or anybody else, that that is not happening, it is incumbent upon you to speak up. So here is a letter that I received from Rebecca G. from Sagaponack and New York City. And this was a letter that I received through Dan's newspaper. Dear BD, I am a 45-year-old married woman with three teenage children. I have been depressed for many years, and I am thinking about seeing a therapist. Well, it's a good move. She says, I'm very well known in the entertainment industry, and I am not comfortable asking my friends or family for a referral. So she saw my column and she sent me an email. So she says, can you give me some suggestions about how I can go about finding a therapist who will hopefully be able to help me? And this is a really important subject. And I am looking at the time. It is 3:47, and the Ask BD show live here in New York City ends at exactly 4:00. And there are many, many, many things that I want to discuss with you and that I want to answer to Rebecca about how to find a therapist. So I'm going to begin, but I don't want to go through these different things too quickly. In fact, I have identified 13 different things that you as a consumer, remember, we're all consumers, whether we're buying cars or cell phones or computers or houses or anything else, and we have to be consumer savvy. We need to be consumer savvy. So this is my beginning response. And I think that next week we are going to go into this in a lot of detail, because I am starting to get emails from readers from Dan's papers. And, you know, and I really encourage you to reach out to me as well if you have questions, if you have comments. And I'd be really, really happy to deal with the comments and the questions, you know, live on the show.
So this is what I'm saying to Rebecca and to any of you who are thinking about getting into therapy, but are really not sure where to begin, and that you're not at all comfortable asking, a friend or family for a referral. So I'm impressed. And I say this to Rebecca. Dear Rebecca, I am impressed that you have finally decided to get some help, since it is too difficult, way too difficult and unnecessary to deal with life's ups and downs on our own. That goes for all of us. And choosing a therapist, okay, it can literally, and I really, really do believe this, it can be one of the most important decisions that someone can make in their life. And it has the potential for far-reaching consequences, both positive and negative, right? All therapists are not the same. You can be harmed. And I'm just not talking about sexual abuse or sexual inappropriateness or anything like that. You can really be harmed if you end up being in therapy with someone who not only does not have the proper credentials, but who is truly not skilled. So more and more people today, as we know, and it's a good thing that mental health, it's a big subject right now, and people are talking about it all the time, which I think is great. So more and more people are seeing therapists for a variety of reasons, as we know, right? Including depression and loneliness and anxiety and bipolar disorder and substance abuse of various kinds, and of course, sexual abuse and relationship and sexual problems. And it is unrealistic to think that the average consumer, okay, unless you know somebody and you trust them and they've had a great experience with the therapist, which still doesn't mean that that's going to be a great experience for you. I think it is unrealistic that the average consumer will know how to go about choosing the right therapist. So we need to be very, very consumer savvy, okay? So here are some suggestions, and we are definitely going to get into this in a lot of detail, you know, next week, because here I am constantly saying, and it's true, that we don't need to navigate life's ups and downs on our own, and that the very best thing that we can actually do is, you know, reach out and ask for help. But it is not like going to a store and buying some wild salmon. Okay, it is tricky. And let me just say that as a practitioner, and I'm somebody who's really very open and honest about my experiences, I have found it extremely challenging, as an example, to find a psychiatrist who I trust, regardless of the degrees and where they went to school and all of those things, to prescribe for my patients. And my patients, many, many who have suffered and experienced severe clinical depression and anxiety for many, many, many years, if not for most of their lives, are telling me exactly the same story, that they have tried doctor number one and doctor number two, and this one is the chief of psychopharmacology, or this person is the chief of psychiatry. And yet, and this is something else I would really appreciate, if you've had some great experiences with psychiatrists, particularly psychiatrists here in New York City, I am always really, really open to hearing about people's positive experiences and reaching out to the psychiatrist, because I, in my practice here in New York City, I actually need a psychiatrist who's a true expert in psychopharmacology to work with me and to work with some of my my patients. So I'm going to give you one suggestion because it is now 3:54 Eastern Standard Time. So the most important thing really is to get a referral from somebody that you trust. Do not, and this is something, please, I'm underlying and underscoring this. Do not be taken in by splashy ads or television appearances or, God forbid, or the likes that we see on our different sites. And also, I want you to remember, you know, you may have a best friend who, you know, says, I love my therapist. I've had a really good experience. And that definitely, I mean, that's a nice thing to look into. But remember that your best friend's therapist may not be best for you. So I'm going to give you one more. That's 2 out of 13, okay? And make sure that your therapist that you choose has considerable clinical experience. You don't want somebody coming out of school. I know I came out of school and I wanted to have a practice, but when I came out of school, I was in no way in a position, experience-wise at all, to be opening up a private practice. So that you want somebody who's had a lot of clinical experience and specializes in your particular problem, because it is not possible to be an expert in everything. And the other thing that you want to ask yourself is part and parcel of this is do you want to work with a woman or a man? And it's so interesting. The women that I work with, they only want to work with a woman. And interestingly, in my private practices in other cities, the men that I used to treat, they only wanted to work with a woman as well. But what we're going to do is we are going to definitely continue on with this subject. It's a very important subject, and I'm encouraging you to, you know, write in your questions if you have any issues that you would like me to tackle. And here we have it, another Ask Beanie show. It's really amazing how the time, it does. It really comes and goes. And I'm hoping that you really are going to be able to take in some of what I have said. And in taking in some of this, that it will make a positive, positive difference in your life. Again, that's why I do the show, okay? Yes, it's fun. It's fun to be able to be a radio talk show host. But, you know, for me, it's about, you know, have I said something that is going to make a difference, a positive difference in your life? So I'm going to leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first message, which you've heard over and over and over again, is to try to make sure that you are doing everything that you possibly can that is in your best interest, to be good to yourself, to love yourself, to be mindful of what's good, what's constructive, what is destructive. And we want to stay on a positive, constructive path. So that's number one. And number two, and we need to think about this. This is not just about us. This is not just about our egos. It's not just about our own happiness. We are members of a society. Yes, we are actually members of a society. So we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other and become a part of something that is greater than ourselves. So goodbye, everybody, and have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the day and a really great week. And I will talk with you next Monday, and every Monday from 3 to 4 live here on the Ask Beanie Show on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you, producers at PRN, and be well, everybody. Bye-bye.